Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies Podcast. I'm Eric Horn. I'm home now. I did this last night. I did this last night with Brett Dawson. I did this in a closet of the Moda Center in Portland, but now I'm in Oklahoma City. We had some technical difficulties, and by technical difficulties, I mean I screwed up and I pulled the SD card out of the podcast kit a little too quickly. My audio was perfect. Brett's audio basically never was born. It just faded into the existence of Portland. Once again, Portland got weird, and it was my fault. But Brett, it was my first time in Portland. Give me a pass.
Somewhere out in the ether, there's my audio. Who knows?
Somewhere. And us talking about R. Kelly.
Yeah, because you were trapped in the closet. You weren't actually trapped in the closet because you could have left at any time, but you could have gotten trapped. Somebody could have come in and locked that thing.
Yeah, and the funny thing was, like, when I came out of that closet, not like figuratively, like literally, like came out of the closet, like walked out of it. You know what I mean? There was a guy sitting there waiting, and it was like 1 something in the morning Pacific time, and ended up striking up a really cool conversation with this guy. He's one of the VPs of something with the Trailblazers. I think maybe like their game day operations or something. So he was like waiting for me to come out, and every time I say coming out, it just sounds weird. It just sounds completely weird. We got on the closet talk.
That seems like the kind of thing that like would happen at, like, because I just watched Spider-Man today, so like that seems like one of those things where Spider-Man walks out and there's a guy like standing there, like, you know, like, because he had to run in there and change clothes back into Peter Parker, and he walks out and the guy's like, what were you doing in there? Like, it seems like that guy would have been like, what was going on in there?
But this is the thing. He saw me go in, so he knew exactly. Okay. He was specifically waiting on me because he had to be, like, the last person out of the building. Gotcha. So
That's nice of him.
It was nice. It was strange because I wasn't expecting him to be there. And right when I opened the door, I was like, oh, here's a person that has been waiting specifically for me to come out of said closet. Interesting.
They take care of you in Portland. They monitor your closet activities.
Yes.
Make sure you get everything you need. They give you a beer, which is nice. You get like a brewery beer in the media room.
It's real.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's a very nice beer. It's big. It's a big freaking beer, too.
Yeah. Big free beer. And they treat everybody really nice there except the Thunder, who they just crap all over.
The actual team, the media people and the people who work for Portland are very nice. The team itself, yep. They just treat Thunder like hot garbage. Thunder loses 108-100. We weren't surprised. We knew this was going to happen. This was one of the most predictable games of the entire season. Second night of a back-to-back. It's in Portland. The Thunder never wins in Portland. They haven't won in Portland for 8 consecutive games now, dating back to 2014. That predates the Billy Donovan era, but they're consistently not great in the Moda Center. Portland gets jazzed up for them. The Trailblazers fans really get excited, and look, Portland's got their number, whether it's at the peak, whether it's in Portland right now. Portland runs the Thunder.
Yeah, and you know, like, we talked about this when we did this podcast the first time. And we'll try to say that 100 times.
Because it was like, it was a good podcast.
Yeah, it was a good podcast.
It was really good.
They're better. They're a better team. Like, they're like right now today, this is the better team this season. Portland is better than the Thunder.
Yeah, and if they met in a playoff series, I feel like Portland would win. Now, look, who has the best player? The Thunder does. Russell Westbrook's the best player out of those two teams, but Damian Lillard's really good. CJ McCollum is really good. Steven Adams has issues with Nurkic. He was okay on him last night because Nurkic got in foul trouble, but he typically has a hard time with those really skilled big men like Nurkic and Jokic. And the Portland bench guys, they're not bad. I mean, they've got an elite offensive rebounder in Ed Davis. Pat Connaughton has turned himself into the West Coast TJ McConnell. Russell Westbrook probably doesn't even know who he is, but they cack and ball. And I don't mean stylistically, folks. I mean, you can put 2 and 2 together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's Ron Baker.
He's Ron Baker. He's Ben Affleck. He's TJ McConnell. You know, Shabazz Muhammad's a solid player. Evan Turner played really...
Napier, not Muhammad. Shabazz Muhammad's bad.
Oh, God, Shabazz Muhammad. Sorry, sorry. Sorry, Shabazz just, Napier. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Just that's who you should apologize to, really.
No, and I did. I'm glad you checked me on that, because Shabazz Muhammad, those guys are like two ends of the spectrum when it comes to like perimeter oriented play. Like Shabazz Muhammad is like 6'6", dark skinned, left handed, and he looks like
he's statistically one of the worst players in the league.
And he looks like he's 46, but he's really like 24. While Shabazz Muhammad is like
Shabazz
barely
Napier, again.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Whereas Shabazz
this is like when Darnell kept calling Jabari Parker.
Yeah.
He just kept, because it's like a name. It's like there's one Jabari. It's like the same thing with Shabazz.
Okay. Again, Shabazz Napier got it right that time. Barely 6 feet, light skinned black guy. A pretty good second unit player, right-handed, and he looks like he's 12. Like,
yeah.
they're like the two opposite ends of the Shabazz spectrum. If there was a Shabazz spectrum, those two guys are on the opposite end. We're getting way too much into Shabazz.
Shabazz Muhammad looks like he could be his dad, age-wise.
He does. He looks
so much older than him.
He looks like he could fit Shabazz Napier in the Louis bag that got him in trouble at UCLA. Remember when he had that Louis bag
reference.
That like his sister bought for him or something?
Like Pat Forty was like, "What's up with this bag?"
Yeah, and he was like, "My sister bought it for me, you idiot!" Like,
yeah, huge controversy.
Yeah, sorry, Pat Forty.
That was college basketball controversy back then. Now it's like, did somebody pay somebody $100,000?
Yeah, which definitely happened, but we don't know if DeAndre Ayton got a sniff of it. See, this is how good last night's podcast was. We can't even like talk about the game because it's so far removed, and like I feel like I gave all of myself to last night's podcast. Like I went in, man. Like I went, and I'm not gonna like say that I was like roasting the Thunder completely, but we talked about this before we got on. Like, it's getting tiring watching this team not play well.
Yeah, and like last night, I don't think they really. There have been nights this year where I've thought, and like I've seen most of the game again now since last night. And like there are games this year where I've thought, well, those guys just weren't really engaged. They didn't play very hard. And I don't really think that was the case last night. Like I think they wanted to play hard. They got some back-to-back legs at some point in the game. And I thought that was evident in the fourth quarter when they were shooting shots short and everything. But like I just didn't think they were good. They just didn't execute very well. They had some breakdowns when they shouldn't have had breakdowns. They had a third quarter when they really had a hard time getting a defensive rebound. Just like little things that you're supposed to do well if you're a good team, they didn't do. And I don't think that's effort. Maybe it's a little bit of fatigue. I think it's just right now they're just like an average team.
Yeah.
They're just okay.
And look, the Blazers weren't that much better than the Thunder last night, but they were better than them. You know, Billy Donovan talked about it. Like he said that he liked the effort. He thought that the guys fought, and you know, at second glance, I could say that that's probably true. But at the same time, they didn't do the things they were supposed to do that teams need to do to win certain games like that. Like, on the road, you have to be better and more precise than you are at home in order to make up for the advantage that the team has as the home team. Last minute, 32 of the game, the Thunder gets off two. I mean, Paul George gets his shot stuffed back in his face, basically, when he drives to the hole. Jeremy Grant has a bad turnover. Russell Westbrook shoots an airball three-pointer. Paul George misses another shot. Basically, they get 2 points in the last minute 32 of the game, and that's inexcusable. Like, you got to get more from your offense, even when you don't have Carmelo Anthony on the floor, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just one of those performances where the Thunder did all it could to get itself within striking distance, and you thought that they had a chance. They got to within four with that minute 32 left when Jeremy Grant had the drive from the corner and scored that crazy Jeremy Grant elbows all over the place layup that he does.
That was the points they got was high degree of difficulty.
Yeah, they were really, really fighting to get the points that they did, but they did. And once they got it to four, once they get it to, I think it was 102-98, you're like, okay, this is a real thing. And then they score 2 points for the next minute 32.
Yeah, they just, you know, and they they were okay defensively. Like, Portland is a team that can light you up, and they really didn't. 108 is like, you know, you give yourself a chance if you give Portland 108 at home.
And
credit, you got a chance to win.
And you got to credit Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, because in the fourth quarter, they made some circus shots. I mean, like, they were making some reverse layups.
CJ made one that was absurd. It was crazy. It was awesome. It was just a ridiculous shot.
Yeah, and we've seen them do that before in Portland, like the play where Damian Lillard drove and just passed through 86 people to get CJ McCollum an open three late in the fourth quarter. The first time they were in Portland this year, those guys made plays, and the Thunder's players didn't make plays down the stretch. But that's the difference between the Thunder and some of these playoff contenders right now. It's the Thunder making plays, or the Thunder not making plays, and some of the playoff contenders making plays. It's going to Denver and Russell Westbrook having a mental lapse, and then everybody covering for Russell Westbrook having a defensive mental lapse, and Jamal Murray hitting a game-winning three-pointer to walk off. Like,
and that's the difference between, like, you know, New Orleans goes to San Antonio and Drew Holiday misses two free throws, Anthony Davis gets a rebound that saves the day. Those are like the plays that's why one team has won seven in a row and they're ahead in the playoff race now. That's the kind of stuff that gets you in trouble, is when you're just you got to have those guys make those plays, and it's not all Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Those guys got to make plays,
right?
But it's not all that. Everybody's got to be better. Patrick Patterson's got to make sure he boxes out Ed Davis.
It's
little stuff like that.
Well, and Steven Adams has got to make sure he boxes out guys, whether it's Ed Davis or Zach Collins or whoever. Whatever inferior player the Blazers throw out there, you know, Blazers are a really good offensive rebounding team, but Steven Adams is a big body, and Patrick Patterson's a wide body. And you've got to be able to get bodies on guys. And it wasn't a situation where those guys were outworking the Thunder in that third quarter, where the Thunder, they exited that third quarter down 12-6 in offensive rebounds. Like, these guys weren't getting touched. And when guys aren't getting touched, you know, you can chalk it up to second night of a back-to-back, but you got to make that second effort. You got to make that effort when you're in a playoff race, and when every game and every result is the difference between seeding. I mean, that could be a game that ends up deciding whether the Thunder's in or out of the playoffs. Like, what are the Blazers
playing as the 6 or the 7 or the 8, and you want to avoid the 7 or the 8 at all costs.
Yeah.
You know, like, now maybe – if you win that game, maybe it's going to be a situation where you end up as the 6. But instead, you lose and you end up as the 7. That's how bunched up everything is right now. Like, people don't want to – like, Billy Donovan, the first night back from the All-Star break when they played in Sacramento, before the game, I was talking to Billy Donovan about that. He said, that's very real, this thing about not making the playoffs. It's real. And, like, people don't want to talk about it. The players don't want to talk about it. The players are – consistently saying they're not worried, but I mean, that's the margin right now. It's a razor
thin. Which brings us to our next point. Brett, would you have sat Carmelo Anthony in Portland Saturday night?
Here's what I would have done. If I had reached this decision that I was going to rest Carmelo Anthony some because I wanted to, whatever the reason was, whether it's because I want to keep Carmelo Anthony fresh, or if it's because I want to take a look at Patrick Patterson with the starters, whatever the case might be, if I had reached that determination, I would have sat him in Phoenix and I would have played him against Portland.
As would I. And the Thunder had every opportunity to do that because they had determined that they were going to go about this after the Phoenix game. Or they determined before the Phoenix game that they were going to go about this. Because I'd gotten word that this was happening, or that they were going to start resting Carmelo Anthony before the Phoenix game. Because I asked Billy Donovan about resting players just because it was a back-to-back scenario, and then I got word that was going to start happening with Carmelo Anthony. They don't know when it's going to happen exactly, or they haven't. I don't think they've mapped that out exactly. It's going to kind of be one of those medical things that Billy Donovan talks about assessing it day-to-day. But as soon as you figure out that they're going to start doing this with Carmelo Anthony, you're like, okay, they're probably going to rest them against Portland. And then it just hits you, and you're like, wait, why? because the Suns are the Suns. And granted, the Thunder struggles with the Suns, too, because they're the Thunder. So, I mean, you rest Carmelo Anthony against the Suns, the Thunder might lose that game, too. I don't know.
Might have lost. It's possible. Nope. The one thing is there are teams against which he is a particularly bad defensive matchup. And I do think Phoenix is one of those teams because they're just so young-legged, you know, like for lack of a better term. They're young and athletic. They got guys that jump and move. And those are the guys that Carmelo at this stage of his career definitely has a problem with. So to me, it wouldn't have even been that bad a strategic thing if you were just going to strategically sit him against one. It's not like Portland has a lot of 33-year-old power forwards. But I do think that's a little bit more comfortable matchup. Not that I think he's played great against Portland necessarily, because none of them have played great against Portland, and I don't have his numbers. He got ejected in the first game, so who knows? Portland weirdness. But, like, to me, on every level, it seems more logical to rest him in that Phoenix game, and I don't totally understand that situation. Like, I don't totally get the idea behind that.
Yeah, I mean, the way Billy Donovan explained it was he wanted to get Melo, you know, a few days in a row rest going into the home stretch that they're about to get into. And the travel this week had been one where it was the medical staff got together and they evaluated and said that this was probably the best day to rest him because of the travel situation. That doesn't really jive with me. Like, I think part of it is that, you know, defensively, Melo's been bad. Offensively, Patterson does, in theory, some of the things that Melo does in terms of spacing the floor. Now, he's not as good of a guy off the dribble or creating his own shot in the post or just being an individual shot creator, but he can space the floor from three.
And he's a better ball mover.
He moves the ball quicker. And, you know, in theory, when Patterson has his legs about him and he's not 40-year-old Patrick Patterson legs, he's a better defender than Carmelo Anthony.
So he's a more switchable guy at the very least.
Yeah.
Like he's a little bit more mobile on the switch than Carmelo is. So yes and yes. You know, it's not a situation I still think, you know, like playoff Carmelo is still the like playoff. Let's add playoff Melo to the list of Melos.
Yeah, and we need to make
like,
that clear.
I still think he's a valuable piece for them. The game I always point to is the Memphis game down there recently where he did not play well. But he made a big shot, the
right
kind of shot you need to make when things break down. This is an example we keep referring back to because that play is the reason why they went and got Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
That is why they have
it. Yeah, and we need to make that clear to people that listen to the podcast. Like, just because Billy Donovan starts Patrick Patterson, or just because I think that there's a theory that they want to kind of limit Carmelo Anthony in certain situations and put Patrick Patterson with the first unit. Somebody's knocking on the apartment above me or something. Something's going on. Or they want to put Patrick Patterson with that first unit in order to generate more ball movement, in order to maybe have more switchability because Carmelo Anthony's a defensive liability. That's not saying that Carmelo Anthony's chopped liver. That's not saying that get rid of Carmelo
right
Anthony, bench him, whatever. It's just
right
saying that
Carmelo
Anthony
not saying
Anthony
the trade
has
was a mistake.
Yeah, it's not saying
that
Melo's a mistake either. It's just that, look, this guy has clear liabilities that Patrick Patterson can maybe fill the void in down this stretch run a little bit better and, frankly, might give them a better chance to be successful in some of these games if they limit some of Carmelo's minutes at the four and get Patrick Patterson in against some of these teams. And he might be able to get some of the guys around him going, and he pairs
right
well with Steven Adams defensively.
Right. And in theory, and, like, we're not saying this is true, in theory, a way that you could do that and still manage the ego side of this,
yes,
is say we're going to rest him instead of you're coming off the bench. Who, me? Yeah, you're coming off the bench. Like, this is a way to just handle it on the ego side a little bit. It's like to massage it a little bit more.
Yeah. Because and there are going to be people out there. As a matter of fact, I was on the plane ride home and they had a guy I was sitting next to, nice guy, but he brought up a lot of the cliches that fans bring up. Oh, yeah, you just bench him. You just bench Russell Westbrook.
Stop.
You can't bench Russell Westbrook. You cannot bench an alpha player and expect that to go well in the locker room. This is not a Greg Popovich situation. Russell Westbrook and those players are the dictators. Greg Popovich is the dictator of the San Antonio Spurs. He has been for 20-some-odd years. This isn't how it works in Thunderland. Thunderland, the players run the asylum. So Billy Donovan is not going to sit Russell Westbrook down and say, oh, Russell, you committed 5 turnovers in the first half. Bad rush. You can't play now in the third quarter against the Phoenix Suns. That's not how it works. And for people
right
who think that that's how it works, then you have the wrong perception of what the Thunder is about. They are player first. The players have control. And Russell Westbrook is going to dictate whether or not he gets to stay in the game or not. Like, and, yeah. and that's not to say that like Billy Donovan is like a puppet, but it's just how it is. Like, Billy Donovan does not have the autonomy of Greg Popovich. I don't know if any coach would have the autonomy of Greg Popovich aside from Greg Popovich, which the Thunder clearly cannot hire because Greg Popovich makes an inordinate amount of money and he's never leaving the Spurs. So get it out of your head. Nobody's going to come in here and put these guys on the bench.
And this, by the way, is more the way it is. Popovich is by far the exception to the rule.
Yeah, most of the league is this way.
There aren't many guys who have that kind of freedom with players. Most of the time, the player has some control. Billy Donovan talks about this all the time, and this is not unusual. He and Westbrook have conversations about Westbrook's minutes. It's not like Donovan says, tonight you're playing this many, and in this game you're going to rest. No, like, they have a conversation. That is, Westbrook decides. If he wants to play an entire quarter, he's probably going to play the entire quarter. Typically, he's got a rotation. We've seen it, you know, like, he's going to come out with a few minutes left in the first. He's going to come back about 9 minutes in the second. If they deviate from that, it's going to be because they have a conversation about deviating. It's not going to be because Billy Donovan calls an audible.
Yeah, and it's not going to be because Russell's playing like trash either. It's going to be because this is the way we do it. This is what Russell's used to. He says it all the time. And whether you like it or not, it's what he says. It's about what the players are comfortable with. If Carmelo and Paul aren't comfortable being staggered the way they are, they adjust accordingly. And you can say that's to the detriment of the team or not, but that's the way they do it. It's like,
and he's talked about that too with Paul and Carmelo before. He's talked about with Paul some of the stuff of the rotation with Paul and the in and out nature of it sometimes. He kind of got away from that a little bit. Like, he wasn't – Paul was in Indiana accustomed to playing the whole first quarter, and Billy wasn't really doing that. And then they kind of gradually gone to where he does that now because that's what he's comfortable with. They tried it the other way. It's not really what Paul likes, so they're not going to do it that way.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting because, like, I kind of rolled up to Carmelo Anthony after the game, and he was just sitting there chilling, and he said, like – I asked him about it, would you have rather – like, how would you have wanted to do this? Like, is this what you wanted to do? And he said he would have rather played against Portland. So it's not 100% player-oriented. Now, I think Russell Westbrook's the exception. I think if Russell Westbrook wants to play, he's going to play. But Carmelo Anthony has made more sacrifice during this entire time he's been here than those other two guys.
Yeah. He's an older player. Probably.
Yeah, and he's an older player. He's 33. He doesn't have the lift he used to have. He's probably a little bit more okay with being like, okay, I'll chill out after, going and getting eight rebounds and I'm struggling from the field and I probably need the break.
We had this last week in the paper. I looked it up. If he plays more than 32, and it's not like 32 is like a magic number, because it's like when you play more than 32, often you've played way more. So sometimes he's playing – it's those games where he gets into playing like 36, 37. And he doesn't do that a ton. But when he does, his production drops off. He's better – at around 30, 31 minutes. That's like statistically true this year, that he's shot significantly better. He's played better when he's played a few fewer minutes. And so, like, it's not a bad idea. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea to rest him. I do think probably, and look, nobody's telling us this Patrick Patterson stuff. I do think there's some of that going on, just this desire to kind of look at Patterson a little and not bench Melo. So rest is like a little bit more politically correct way to do that. But limiting his minutes is a good idea. It's just smart. It's the right thing to do.
And look, remember, Patterson was supposed to be the starter at power forward before Melo just showed up on their doorstep basically 2 days before camp.
Yeah, and they had an offseason to plan for that. I mean, that was the thing. They had a couple of months where Billy Donovan's not like a big, like, kick his feet up and golf guy. He's kind of planning. You know, he's thinking about stuff a lot in summer. He spends a lot of his summer just kind of watching stuff and thinking about stuff. So they had spent a lot of time thinking about Patterson at power forward. Now, they've had a ton of time with Carmelo, so I'm not saying that's like an I'm not using that as like an excuse for why they haven't played well. But they did have an idea that Patterson would be playing with these guys.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I thought this game was way farther along than it is. But Indy and Washington are – playing an 80-75 game, and I thought it was in the last seconds, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is setting back basketball so far. But before we get out of here, we got to talk about Corey Brewer.
Yes, the drunken dribbler.
that sounds like some like name for like a Asian like action hero or something, like, you know, like,
yeah,
or like an Asian fighting style.
Yeah, there's the Drunken Master. That's an old kung fu movie.
Yeah.
Maybe like an old Jackie Chan movie? Did Jackie Chan remake it? I don't know. There's something called the Drunken
Master. Corey Brewer remade it last night.
Yes. Yeah. I looked that up today, by the way, the Drunken Dribbler. That is an actual nickname. It is a thing that his Florida teammates called him. And it is exactly why you think it is. It's because it looks like he's hammered when he dribbles.
Yeah.
That's why they made fun of him, because he's a bad ball handler, and that's what they called him.
And the one time he got the ball and tried to do things last night, it was like I started laughing as soon as he started bringing the ball up, and I was trying to like be professional where I was sitting. I was just like, man, don't do this, Corey Brewer. Like, you're just gonna get the internet mad at you. I don't think most of these guys worry about that stuff because they're making millions of dollars and they don't care. But not a great debut for Mr. Brewer, who basically had a rough past few days in terms of travel. He started in Miami with the Lakers, then he had to go to LA, then he had to go to Oklahoma City, then he met the team on Friday night in Phoenix, flew with the team to Portland Friday night, and through all of this, did not really have any practice. Didn't have any practice time with the Thunder. Didn't have a shoot around on Saturday morning because it was the second night of a back to back. So basically, Billy Donovan said, hey, look, hang out with the guys, watch a little film, we'll see if we'll get you some minutes. And who's the first substitution off the bench in the first quarter?
Drunken Dribbler.
Drunken Dribbler out there just dribbling drunk.
He
four fouls in 12 minutes.
He took – I thought last night he had only taken one shot. He actually took two because I forgot to heave.
Yeah, you forgot to heave at the end of the second quarter.
Chucked one up at the end of the second quarter. It was not – it did not have Taj Gibson-like success in Portland after being recently acquired by the Thunder. Taj Gibson had great success doing that last year. Not such success for Corey Brewer. But the funny thing is, like, that shot was high off the backboard, that heave that he threw up from about 40 feet. It was about as close to going in. It probably had a better chance of going in than the corner three that was a pretty decent look that hit the side of the backboard. I mean, that hit the side of the backboard. Oh, so, like, you hit the top of the backboard. At least there's a chance. The angle, you know, it might go down and hit the rim and bounce. You got nothing if you hit the side of the backboard. So he didn't shoot it well. He looked a little lost at times defensively, I thought. He admitted after the game, I think, when you talked to him, that he wasn't really there defensively. He said he's got to be more solid than he was defensively. I do think there's a lot of – I mean, obviously you mentioned the jet lag nature of his week. And I do think it looked to me like he was trying so hard to make a good first impression. You know, it was like a doing too much situation. He's going to settle down. He's not going to be that bad all the time, but it was not a great start.
No. And the good news is, you know, he went through that ringer of travel that I mentioned. I mean, that's four time zones in 4 days, which is just insane. He's going to get to practice. The Thunder schedule plays out down the stretch to where they're going to have extended periods of 2 days off. They got two stretches where they have 3 days off in a row. They're going to be able to get practice time. They're going to be able to get a lot of film time. And Brewer's going to, you would imagine, look better once he gets acclimated with those guys and gets to playing and practicing with those guys. The bad news is, look, Corey Brewer wasn't playing that much to begin with the Lakers. And the Lakers aren't that good. They've been better recently, but they're not a good team.
Right, but he wasn't playing.
Guys get waived for a reason. You know, like if Corey Brewer was worth keeping around, the Lakers would have kept him around. This is a guy that we really don't know what we're going to get from him. You know, Houston included him as an add-in to get Lou Williams for a playoff run last season. And Lou Williams ended up killing the Thunder. The Lakers parted ways with Brewer. He was on the back end of their rotation in terms of minutes. I think he was only averaging like 12.9 minutes a game. And last night he just looked terrible. But the scariest thing of all of this, the bad news, is Billy Donovan kind of talked about this guy like he might be a guy who's going to play heavy rotation minutes with the core four. Like he could be the starter at shooting guard.
I mean, I've said that it doesn't seem far-fetched in the sense that he's talked a bunch about liking Josh Eustace as like a second unit guy. Like he likes that you got Paul George as this type of guy in the first unit defensively. And like you like the idea. He likes the idea that he can bring in Eustace to be that same type of guy. He's not as good. Don't at me. But he does some of the same stuff defensively, not as well, but like just with his, in terms of his length and his versatility, they do kind of like having Huston as a second unit guy, but they don't have a starter that they really like. They obviously don't like Abrines a whole lot there because of the defensive deficiencies. And Terrence Ferguson is like, he's one good game out of every like five. He can, you can count on him to do some stuff, but he's not a guy you can count on. And certainly not a guy I think you would want to count on in the playoffs.
All right. Pop quiz, bro. Yeah. How many times have the Houston Rockets scored less than 100 points all season?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Three. I don't even know if it's three. It might be zero.
You actually went low. It's five.
Okay.
Five times they scored less than 100. And in those five games, they are 2-3. I don't know.
Wonder who played in those games, because we know who didn't play in those games. We know that the combination, the trio of James Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella didn't play in all those games, because that would be statistically impossible.
Well, actually,
because they have one loss when all those guys play.
Actually, and the losses, okay, you're right in the losses. One of those games that they've scored under 100 points has come in this 15-game winning streak they're on. They beat the Jazz 96-85.
Okay.
But they still won by double digits. I don't know why I even brought that stat up. The point is, I'm looking at the Rockets' schedule. They won 15 straight. I thought they had a game in between now and when they play the Thunder on Tuesday. They don't. This is a problem for the Thunder because the Rockets are going to come in here rested. Yeah. It's going to be an issue.
Yep. Eric Gordon told Tim McMahon tweeted, I don't know if he said it to Tim, but said if they don't lose in the next three games, he doesn't see them losing the rest of the season.
They've got a back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday, Thunder, and then Milwaukee. And then they go to Toronto on Friday. And, look, Eric Gordon, big cojones there, man. Big cojones from Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
They've got the Spurs. They got the Pelicans. They got the Pelicans and the Timberwolves on a back-to-back the 17th and the 18th. And then they got Portland 2 days after that. Eric Gordon's going out on a limb here.
Well, as far as I know, Portland's unbeatable. So, based on my personal experience, anecdotally, Portland can't lose.
Yeah, they've got Portland twice. They got the Spurs. They got the Spurs once. They got the Thunder twice. They've got the Wizards. They've got the Timberwolves, and they've got the Pelicans twice. All right, Eric Gordon, good luck. Good luck with your.
Eric Gordon fears no man.
He fears no man. But look, this is a team that has lost twice. Or, let's see, four times since the beginning of January. They've lost four times in 2 months.
The Thunder might have two four-game losing streaks in that streak. They got at least one.
Yeah. Yeah. And
this raises a slightly embarrassing point for me, which was that I did not think that the difference between these two was going to be very big. I thought Houston would get better. But I thought the Thunder would get so much better that I thought the gap would close pretty significantly. And it's as wide as it was last year.
I severely underestimated how good Houston was going to be.
Yeah, me too.
Look, I knew Chris Paul and Harden was going to work. We saw that preseason game, and it was just like, whoa.
Everybody was going to get such easy shots.
We were like this is going to be fun.
That's what we came out of Tulsa saying. Like, man, the other dudes are going to get easy shots.
Yeah, we were like, this is going to work just fine. But I didn't think it was going to be a, you know, pressing the Warriors for first kind of thing, or their defense was going to be much better.
That's hugely surprising.
Yeah, their defense has been better. And this is with Chris Paul missing however many games and James Harden missing however many games. I mean, those guys together, like you said, they just don't lose. So
yeah, and having no Beverly, that's, I thought Beverly would really hurt defensively. I thought the lack of that would, like, all the stuff that he brought. But Paul has brought that stuff, and then they've just stepped up other places. Other guys have just been better, and they're a good team defense.
And James Harden's the MVP this year. He just makes those guys better. He gets great shots with his game. That isolation game that actually creates better shots for other guys. PJ Tucker and Luke Richard Mbiambute turning into competent 3-point shooters because they're playing with a guy like James Harden in that D'Antoni system. It's just Harden's the guy this year, man. He's playing out of his mind.
as good as he's been, the step back three pointer is like a new, it's almost like a new weapon because he's so good at it now. It's just, it's devastating. It makes him so hard to guard. And so, yeah, the Thunder gets to try on Tuesday with no Andre Robertson, who has by far been their most successful guy with Harden.
Well, hey, they can throw the drunken dribbler out there at him.
There you go.
They throw Corey Brewer out there and see what happens. Look, at the least, Corey Brewer can give him some intel. I mean, he spent two seasons in Houston. At the least, he can try to give him a couple of pointers. But I got a feeling James Harden's hit the step back on Corey Brewer in practice more than a few times.
Yeah, yeah. There's no doubt that that has happened. And that he's going to hit some on Tuesday, and he's going to get fouled. And, you know, actually, you know what? That's a little bit of a segue. He's going to get fouled on a three-point shot on Tuesday. It's going to happen. And people are going to lose their minds because people are losing their minds about officiating now. And the Thunders, this has got to calm down.
Yeah, it's got to stop.
This mind loss over officiating. And Thunder fans, by the way, you have Russell Westbrook and Paul George on your team. The league doesn't hate you. It likes you a whole lot. It would like you in the playoffs. It would like you to play the Warriors deep in the playoffs. The league is very content to have the Thunder do good things. There is no conspiracy. Stop.
Yeah, and we can touch on this quickly before we go. The Nurkic thing last night with Steven Adams, where Nurkic veered off and obviously was trying to give Steven Adams a shoulder. We talked about this last night. It wasn't the Jeff Teague on Ricky Rubio play. And I had people who worked for the Thunder trying to tell me it was comparable to that last night, and I was like, and they're like, you need to ask the pool reporter this about how it. And they did that last night, and the guy got kicked out. And the first thing I said, I was like, look, I'm not taking something from a night before and comparing it to something that's happening now. That's two different officiating crews. That's comparing apples and oranges. Or maybe apples and another fruit that's shaped like an apple or looks like an apple. But it's not the same fruit because Jeff Teague was trying to – and Ricky Rubio had the ball, and he didn't even go for the ball. Now, Nurkic was just being a knucklehead, and he probably deserved to – I mean, at the least, he deserved a foul. I think at the most, probably like a flagrant one. He didn't deserve a flagrant two for that. But
no, and Teague did. Teague deserved a flagrant two. It was the right call. Had a head of steam, different kind of play. If you think the two plays are the same, I can't help you. They're just not the same play. Like, they are similar in the sense that in a semi-open floor situation, one guy runs into another guy. But they're much closer. They start much closer than the Teague thing, where you're just kind of running to catch up and make it happen. They're just not the same play. I think Nurkic should have gotten a flagrant one, not a flagrant two. So in that case, I think they're different. I don't think Russell Westbrook deserved a technical to follow it. But, like, whatever. This is not some conspiracy to go out and hose the Thunder. They've gotten some bad breaks. They also get some good ones. They had a sequence last night. There were at least two great breaks on goaltending calls because they probably took a ball off the glass that wasn't called a goaltend. And they very much – the Blazers then very much did not take one off the glass that was called a goaltend. And, you know, that's a five-point swing there. So bad officiating happens. Mistakes happen in officiating. The Thunder makes a ton of mistakes on its own. The other team makes a bunch of mistakes too. Officials are human just like they are. It happens.
Yeah, look, if people want to complain about the Thunder not getting calls – how about the Thunder make the free throws when they actually get to the line? They shot like 66% from the line last night on 21 attempts. make the free throws when you actually get there, and then you could complain about not getting calls. Like go shoot 80% consistently. Go shoot high 70s. The Thunder's in the low 70s in free throw shooting this year. Like, come on.
And to their credit, I know you talked to Paul George about this there, and you wrote about this. Paul George, I think, even concedes they gotta calm down with this stuff. It's getting out of hand with how they're getting too demonstrably upset. Like, they need to get it because it feels like it's getting in their heads.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too. They're grownups, man. They gotta play through that stuff. And I think once they get past that, I think that's gonna help them offensively too. Because, it's gonna help them defensively too as well. Because they spend so much time trailing behind plays, complaining about plays, Westbrook and Paul George, that they're basically playing a man down on defense as the other team goes down in transition. So you can't have that consistently happening. That's going to burn you. That's going to burn you from the three-point line because your defense is going to be scattered. They're going to be running around trying to get closeouts that they have no business getting because you're trailing behind the play, complaining, that there's you didn't get a call.
Play last night where Westbrook drove baseline, thought he got fouled, and he just jumped in the air in anger. He's lucky because it was such a big motion. He's lucky he didn't get a technical because he already had one. He would have gotten ejected if he had. I think if he had not had a technical in the game, and if it were a later situation, a different situation, he might have gotten one in that for that reaction.
Yeah.
I think smart of the officials not to give him one just because of circumstances. But like, I think he would have gotten one in a lot of situations, and they end up getting a three at the other end. And I'm not saying Westbrook being back would have taken away that three, but you're operating without numbers when that happens because you've got a guy back. And like Paul George, I am as complimentary of it as anybody of Paul George. I think he's really good. He's one of my favorite guys in the league to cover. He's fun to watch. And I have marveled this year watching him up close how good he is. He's much better than I even knew he was, and I knew he was good. But based on this year, if Paul George stays here and has a really good career and they build a statue, it's going to be with him raised, his arms raised incredulously about not getting a foul, because that's the stance I see him in most of the time.
Yeah, he's just got his arms out like just out like he's trying to bear hug somebody, but he's not.
Yeah.
Like nobody nobody ever shows up, so he's like, hey,
yeah,
how come you didn't come get this bear hug?
Just arms out, arms out. In disbelief.
He's asking he's asking Kenny Maurer, like, come get this bear hug, Kenny. And Kenny's like, no.
No, Paul, he didn't hit you.
No, he didn't hit you, Paul.
And I think Paul gets a bad break on some calls. I do. I think he drives so much, and I do think he's a little discombobulated himself. He's not a drunken dribbler, but he gets a little bit wonky on the dribble, but in kind of a good way. That crossover is a little bit, it's unorthodox. That little behind the back thing he does when he gives you the shoulder. And I think he initiates and doesn't initiate. Sometimes he draws a ton of contact and he doesn't get calls. And I think the point LeBron James made this week is a significant point, that he feels like the NBA has gotten to the point where it's protecting jump shooters more than it's protecting drivers. And that might be something that the league needs to look at or whatever. So I do believe all that stuff. I do think they've gotten some raw deals, but everybody gets some calls they don't like. And you just have to sort of roll with it sometimes, and these guys have not been very good at rolling with it.
Yeah, they got to move forward, man. And look, they're going to be upset with some calls on Tuesday. I tell you that much, because that's going to be a complaint. That's going to be a complaining game. Oh my goodness, the complaining is going to be through the roof for
Westbrook, George, Harden, Paul on the same court, and it's not like Eric Gordon is not doing it. He does it too.
It's gonna be
and Carmelo, because Carmelo will play.
Yeah, and Melo.
I didn't think about the fact Carmelo's gonna play. So yeah, you got three guys at least on each side.
Yeah, it's gonna be fantastic, because the first time they played this year, Chris Paul didn't play. So man, there's gonna be some complaining. Oh man, that's gonna be fun. Let's wrap this thing up, man. Good rebound pod. I don't think it was last night, but a solid rebound pod.
Yeah. Last night, so fresh in the moment, it's hard to replicate exactly that vibe, because you're just like, you're kind of wound up, and now it's like, it's Sunday, you're kind of winding down, you've traveled, starting to think about the week ahead.
Yeah. All right, I'm Eric Horn, Brett Dawson's here. We will talk to you all after Tuesday. Rockets, Thunder, big game at the Peak.